Welcome to Reality Check. Today we're going to talk about something very, very important.
And exciting.
Yes. Exciting, important, transforming. This can make a really big difference.
And very useful. Practical.
Yes. And we're going to talk about responsibility, which means the ability to respond to the situation, or really, the best way to look at responsibility is simply not to blame. And Akura's had amazing results with people, with devotees and non-devotees that he coaches with this one principle. And I think he feels it's foundational to any kind of success. And once you get this right, then everything else is easy.
Not exactly easy, but once devotees take full responsibility for their lives, stop blaming God, ISKCON, their parents, then I have seen in many, many cases, then their real success starts and they start to move forward in what they really want to achieve. So responsibility is a very, very powerful success principle. And also, although in the beginning, taking full responsibility for everything you have done in the past, everything you're doing at present, and everything you will do in the future, might seem like burdensome and hard, but actually it brings peace. It brings inner peace.
What do you mean by taking full responsibility, as opposed to what? If you don't take responsibility, what does that mean and what does that look like practically?
If you don't take responsibility, you think that other people are responsible for your happiness. But if you take responsibility for your life, for your activities, for your results, then you are taking responsibility. I ask everyone to take 108% responsibility.
You know, the first time that you and I did a coaching session, I remember very clearly what happened, and I tell this to anyone that I coach or counsel or advise. First had a coaching session with you. I was wanting to develop seminars, particularly I wanted to develop seminars and other educational materials for non-devotees. And so I had written some things, but I hadn't really done much at that point. And I was telling you why I wasn't doing much. And you were constantly saying, don't tell me what you can't do, just tell me something you can do. Which was, you know, it's quite simple when you think about it, but it's a lot of us think that way. We look at a situation and we think of all the things we can't do, all the reasons we can't do it. And if we just look at a few things we can do and start working on them, it builds on itself. And another, I remember, within our organization, there were times in our history where things got pretty discouraging. A lot of leaders had left at a certain part, a certain time in the 80s, and it was in the areas that I was working, and it was a lot of devotees were discouraged, and a lot of energy was put on just talking about how bad it was, not talking about what we should do now or can do. It was so I really understood it very clearly when you said that, is if you're focusing on what you can't do, then you become paralyzed.
Right. One American president said, do what you can with what you have right where you are. And if you add to this, or before this, you add, don't complain, don't blame, do what you can with what you have right where you are, then your life becomes completely different.
Nice. So, do what you can with what you have, where you are.
Right where you are.
Right where you are. There's a church that they came out with a shirt. Well, not a shirt, they came out with a symbol. That was no complaints. You heard about that?
No.
It was a whole move within the church to give up the addiction to complaining, to abstain from complaining. So they had a whole campaign, no complaints. And he said it was quite transforming when you actually think about it, because it's so easy to complain because there's so many things to complain about. And if you understand it very carefully, you'll see that the more you complain, the more you're like digging a grave for yourself, or you're putting yourself into a corner, because each complaint convinces you that you can't move forward, because you have all the reasons why you can't move forward.
Yeah, that's one of the self-sabotage habits that we have, blaming and complaining. So we have to understand that this is in our own self-interest to give up these habits of thinking and speaking. And taking responsibility is very liberating. You feel actually much better when you take it on yourself that I'm responsible. Even let's say there is a relationship and then somebody is doing something wrong and you tend to blame them, or it's very obvious that they are doing something wrong. But if you take full responsibility for making this relationship work, or at least doing your part well, then you are peaceful. At least in front of God, you are peaceful. And what they will do, this is their responsibility.
I think it's really important for devotees to understand that in any situation they're in, no matter how much they feel or believe they are a victim in that situation, there's another side to it. And I can give you an example. A devotee once told me that her husband had taken money from her and left her, and she thus had become the victim. It was a long story, but that was the basis of it. They had a joint account. He ran off with the money. He left her. They had just sold the house, so he was taking the money from the sale of the house. And that was, you know, the money that they had to live on. So then we asked her, now, tell that same story, but this time, take responsibility for what happened. So she had to tell the same story, but instead of blaming her husband, she had to blame herself for that, which normally is not a way we would think. So she had to think a little bit. So she told the story again and said, I was foolish for having the joint account. I should have known that it was possible, based on some of his behaviors in the past, that he could have done something like this. I think she even took it as far as said that I was foolish even to have a relationship with him, because he was known to not be dishonest, or people told me that in the past when I first met him. And so, as you're saying, it's a very liberating position to be in. And we tend to think, or, you know, as we see the world, we tend to think it's only that way. So this is so liberating because it turns the story around. Mm-hmm. And then when you start to think in those terms, then you see how much you can do in a situation in which previously you thought you were a victim and could do nothing.
Mm-hmm. One other advantage of taking responsibility is that it, my experience is that it ensures a flow of mercy from Krishna to you. I remember when I left my service of being a temple president in Belgrade in the 80s, there were different circumstances. I was also translating books, so it was difficult to combine management and peaceful translation work. And I was never into management 100%. I just took it because they asked me. But I wrote to my spiritual master. I said, wow, this is amazing. When I had this responsibility, I always felt like protected, supported. I felt the flow of mercy is very strong. And now it seems that it has gone. It's gone. So Srila Prabhupada wrote to one disciple that he was very, very pleased that he has taken responsibility for one center and for one area to preach. And Srila Prabhupada would confirm this so many times, that he was pleased when his disciples would take responsibility.
I think one of the things that Prabhupada was dealing with us as young devotees, particularly as hippies, was just the opposite. That hippie was hippie means to be carefree, as we say, footloose, fancy free. And I remember one time we got a letter from our GBC, and he was concerned about irresponsibility. And in the letter he said, "We are not hippies anymore." That mentality was so rampant at that time. And Srila Prabhupada was so much not that way, so much of a responsible person. And anytime you write Prabhupada a letter, you'd always get a reply. You know, we may sometimes get letters and neglect to reply. We may tell somebody, "I'm going to meet you at a certain time," and forget or come late. And Srila Prabhupada was always the ideal of responsibility. What to speak of taking the responsibility as a spiritual master? It's never that Prabhupada ever gave up his responsibility. We may have not followed the principles perfectly. And we've seen how let down devotees are when a spiritual master gives up his responsibility. It's devastating. When you have a responsibility to another person, to a wife, a husband, a child, it's devastating for them if you give up responsibility. And so Prabhupada certainly encouraged us. I wanted to take sannyas, and he said, "First become a perfect grihastha." Because he saw that I was being irresponsible. That was ultimately why I wanted to take sannyas. I wanted to leave the responsibilities of the family. So he said, "I will not give my disciples sannyas who are first not perfect householders." So perfect householder meant perfectly responsible. You do your duties. You take care of everyone. Sometimes, obviously, it's difficult. So that's what he was teaching us. And then I read this letter that totally amazed me, which took me years to understand, and still I can't say I perfectly understand it. And Prabhupada said, "Whenever there's anything wrong in the temple, you should think it's my fault."
Wow, you have that letter?
I don't know if I can find it, but I clearly remember reading this. In other words, I think, you know, my understanding over the years of meditating on this is that Prabhupada knew our tendency to blame, and also how detrimental it is for us to blame, because then we don't work on ourselves, we don't see the problem within us. And I believe one of the points he was making that is if there's something wrong, then do something to rectify it. Because it's very easy to just say, "This is wrong, why don't they do this? They always do it this way," as opposed to, "Well, take it upon yourself to rectify it." So in that sense, even though it may not be your personal responsibility or personal fault that something happened, you could do something to rectify it. And there's this amazing story. Srila Prabhupada was going on a tour of the L.A. temple with his servant. And the L.A. temple, at that time when Prabhupada was touring, had the art department. So they would do a painting. The painting would be photographed for the book, and then they'd have all these paintings. They had more paintings than they could hang. So they were walking through the deity, the pujari room, and there was a painting on the floor. And Prabhupada was very upset that the paintings were sitting on the floor. I think they were leaning against a cabinet, but they were on the floor. So he's very upset that the paintings were on the floor. And he said, "Who has done this, or why is this being done?" And his servant, who was just traveling with him, had nothing to do with the LA temple, said, he said, "Prabhupada, I don't know, it's not my responsibility." And Prabhupada said, "Yes, it is your responsibility." So I think what Prabhupada meant is that if you see something is wrong, then it's now your responsibility to do something, whatever you can, to rectify it.
One way to, I would say, switch to a responsibility or taking responsibility mode is the question you ask yourself. If you ask yourself the right question, then you can switch into responsibility as opposed to blaming or irresponsibility. If you ask why they, instead of asking why they, you can ask how can I? And if you see something and they say, okay, this is maybe someone's responsibility officially, but I feel responsible for the temple, for the service, and let me see what I can do about this. Like, if this is not unclean, I will clean it, or I will find someone to clean it, and Krishna will be pleased.
I think also responsibility, that saying of Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. I think part of responsibility also means that in certain situations where you have little influence or control, at least you can act in the way that you want others to act, or be the way you would like others to be.
Exactly. Yesterday I saw a short movie from one training company of a lady. She was either teacher or principal. She came into a primary school somewhere in America, and it was obnoxious. It was dirty, like toilets were stinking like anything. And one day she went into a toilet and she said, "Wow, why is it stinking so much?" And then the person who accompanied her, one of the, people in the school, officials, they said, "Well, I think the boys there are actually passing water, not in the how do you call this thing?
It's not in the toilet or the urinal."
Yeah, not in the urinal, but actually on the floor or something, and that's why it stinks so much and it's not washed. And she just roll up her sleeves, got some soap, got the bucket, and washed everything. And everybody was amazed. She was a principal or one of the most important teachers, and she would do this. And you would see in the next few days, everybody in the school, all the teachers and all the kids, they started cleaning, and the school became spotlessly clean. So that's leadership. That's taking responsibility.
Very nice story. I think a lot of us, particularly I'm finding in our culture among men, they don't like taking responsibility for their families. They find it difficult. I don't want to say they don't like it, but they often find it difficult, particularly devotees who have grown up in a temple, who get married and have to take the responsibility of working. It's such a different life than they've lived as devotees. They may be doing something that is totally not in line with their nature. It's not inspiring. They may be working with people they'd rather not be spending time with, people that may have an ill influence on their consciousness. And aside from that, there's so many other responsibilities involved in raising a family that often get in the way of our sadhana and our service. And I see that many, many times men often have a problem being responsible as grihasthas. And I think it's at least important to know that being responsible in this way builds strength. And I've been a temple president many times, and sometimes the responsibilities as temple president can be overwhelming. Occasionally, yep. Just everything goes wrong at one time, and you're often dealing with things you've never dealt with before, and you don't have the necessary capability or qualification to deal with it. And I've always felt that at those times, when things are difficult, it's an offering from Krishna, saying, "Here is something difficult, and if you take responsibility for it, if you don't give up your service, if you remain dutiful, you become much stronger by doing it. You become more steady, more capable." So I think it's important to realize that. In that even if we're doing something that is not directly related to bhakti or sadhana, such as working, or oftentimes, the fathers and mothers are with the family and the kids, it's not directly, doesn't appear externally to be directly related to any kind of service or preaching other than just helping the children, which is, of course, service. But taking that responsibility, doing it dutifully, is also a service. And it's also what Srila Prabhupada expected. And I remember one godbrother who had met Srila Prabhupada after a few years of not seeing him, who was a leader in the movement. And over those few years he hadn't seen Prabhupada, he had moved outside the temple and gotten a job and wasn't involved as he had been. And he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked him, what are you doing? And he was embarrassed because he wasn't doing direct service. He said, well, Prabhupada, I have this job or this work I'm doing or this business to support my family. And I think he felt guilty, not only embarrassed, but just guilty. And Prabhupada saw that, and he said, well, you have to do something to maintain your family. So Prabhupada just accepted it. You know, these responsibilities are normal, and you shouldn't run away from them.
You mentioned at the beginning that responsibility means the ability to respond, responsibility. So part of being responsible, in my understanding, is that how do you react to anything that happens to you? How do you react to any stimulus or stimuli? And what is the responsible reaction? So you can react to the same thing differently. You can react based on the false ego or ignorance, or you can react based on higher knowledge or the soul or intelligence of the soul. So for example, if someone tells you you're very ugly, you can punch him back, you can say you are ugly too, you're uglier than me, you can get offended, but you can also say, well, thank God I'm not this body and I have much nicer spiritual body, which will be manifested in time when I get purified, and so what you see is not me.
No, I am very beautiful as a spirit soul, but the body is not beautiful. Yes, you are right.
Yeah, well, there's also different people have different tastes, but to the same, we can always, there is not only one way how we can react to anything that happens to us. So if we practice, then, you know, we can react differently. We can react more responsibly and more based on higher knowledge.
I had an experience with this. This is a really amazing experience. I hired someone to help me in my business. Not my seminar business, but my other business. And we go to shows and art fairs and music festivals and so forth, outdoor shows. And we have a line of very beautiful jewelry that we've developed that we sell. And I began doing this when I lived in India, and we would bring back jewelry. Would stay in India for 6 months, we'd bring it back, and that was our business, and we would make enough money and we would go back to India. And so it began that way as a means to support ourselves while we lived in India. And then at a certain point we moved back to America, so we obviously needed more money to live in America, so we developed this business. And then I had a close friend, and he said, do you need anybody to help in your business? I can go out and also sell. So I said, okay, let's see if we can do it. So then I set him up. So basically, he was doing exactly the same thing I was doing, but he would do different shows. And an amazing thing happened. He didn't do things the same way I did them, and he didn't react to the difficulties or the obstacles that we have to undergo to do it the same way I did. I would need a person to help me. He would say, no, I don't need another person to help me. I would need so many hours to set up or get ready. He wouldn't. And I began to think, this is really interesting. It's really helpful. If you have someone in your life who could walk into your life and just take over for a week and see how they react to the situation, I guarantee you their reactions will not be the same. What you may think is difficult, they may come in and say, oh, that was easy. I don't understand why you're complaining about all this. This is nothing.
Wow.
And then I thought we should get a group of men, like four or five men, and then we'll do musical chairs that will 1 week we'll all take another person's position. So you have to work at my company, and so you have to work at my business, and you have to do this and that, and then we'll report back. And And you might think, wow, in my job it's so difficult, I can't get my rounds done, or I'm so exhausted from doing it, or it's such long hours. And your friend may do that same job and come back and say, oh, that was so easy. I actually chanted 32 rounds every day. You have it so easy. So, you know, the different perspectives. The different perspective that I got was it was really helpful, because then whenever I would complain, I would think, well, how would someone else in this situation react? And you know how often people say, well, everybody knows, or anybody in this situation would react that way? That's not true. And it's a very disempowering, unempowering way to think. Well, everybody would react this way, or everybody knows that you can't do this, or in this situation, everybody knows in this situation this is how you're affected. It reveals an underlying belief we have about how to deal with the situation, but it's a very subjective thing. It's not universal.
I would like to go back to this very powerful life skill or a tool to use in choosing how to react in any situation. And this is, again, what question do you ask yourself when you encounter anything?
Empowering question, as opposed to
right.
Unempowering, yeah. Disempowering.
Disempowering questions. So if you encounter something, you can ask several questions that really can change the way you think and can connect you to some intelligence that you wouldn't have access if you would react in a way that you usually react. For example, you can ask yourself, if I would be super intelligent, how would I deal with this? Or if I would be world expert on these kinds of issues, how would I deal with this?
I like that one. If I would be the world expert on this.
Yeah, just kind of, put another hat and then see how your brain works and how this changes the whole situation. Sometimes devotees ask me, how can I actually, I agree with what you say and I want to apply it, but at the moment when something hits me, I tend to react impulsively as I always do. And I tell them, what you can do, you can take a deep breath and say, Hare Krishna, and immediately connect yourself with the holy name and with Krishna. And then you can, after that, you can ask yourself, okay, what's the best way to deal with this? And or how can I, what's the most Krishna conscious way to react to this? What kind of reaction would please my spiritual master or Srila Prabhupada or Krishna? What kind of reaction? So these questions can really change our life. And so I give an extreme example. It's a story of a man in the concentration camp. Extreme example how one question actually saved his life. It was in the Second World War when in Poland, Nazis came into one man's house and killed his family in front of his eyes and took him to the concentration camp for, you know, experiments on his body, and ultimately they would kill him in the gas chambers. So, but unlike other prisoners, he wouldn't surrender to this idea that I'm going to stay here. Every day he was asking, how can I escape? How can I escape? And he tried to actually involve other prisoners into creating a plan how to escape. And they would tell him, you're just torturing your mind. It's impossible. Just forget it. But he wouldn't stop asking himself, how can I escape? How can I escape? And one day, he got an idea.
Where did that idea come from?
Well, you can explain later. So he saw this truck with corpses, you know, people that have been killed in the gas chambers. And it was a twilight. They were coming back from the day's work, and the guards were a bit ahead. So he quickly took off his clothes, threw it in the bushes, and climbed on that truck and mixed himself with corpses and waited. And then after 15-20 minutes, the driver came, and of course they unload the corpses outside of the premises of the concentration camp, outside of the fence. And he was waiting, and it wasn't pleasant to be with these corpses, because, you know, some of them started decomposing. These are all dead bodies. It's a bit scary, but he thought maybe it's worth it. So the driver, you know, drove the the truck for about 15-20 minutes outside of the fence, and started unloading the corpses. And you know, he fell together with different corpses, and he was very quiet. And when you know, he was covered with few corpses, and he just waited. And he waited until he didn't hear any sound of the truck, because truck has been gone. And then he got up and ran naked like 25 miles to freedom. So this question saved his life. The way he reacted to the impossible situation in the concentration camp by asking himself this question saved his life.
I think Srila Prabhupada's spreading of Krishna consciousness in America was in a sense similar, and that it seemed also impossible. At least for many of his contemporaries, it seemed an impossible task. And he never accepted that. It was impossible.
Right.
I think we're going to end today on this point, because it's going to lead us into our next discussion, which is on the power of questions. And
yay!
This is a big thing for Akura. He likes talking about the power of questions. I think we both realize that there is incredible power in asking the right type of question, and in an incredible amount of disempowerment in asking the wrong type of question. So we're going to leave that hanging until...
Watch out, tomorrow.
We'll leave that hanging until tomorrow or to our next session. And until then, we want to wish you a Hare Krishna and give you our contact information. If you would like coaching sessions or you have any questions for Akura, akura@pamho.net, akrura@pamho.net. And you can get me at mahat@aol.com or mahatmadasa@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, everyone.